But I'd like to start our next discussion with a quote from the Russian novelist and essayist Fyodor Dostoevsky. "The thought once occurred to me," he wrote, "that if one wanted to crush and destroy a man entirely, to mete out to him the most terrible punishment, one at which the most fearsome murderer would tremble, shrinking from it in advance, all one would have to do is to make him do work that was completely and utterly devoid of usefulness and meaning." Well, that's the taster at the front of a new book, How to Find Fulfilling Work, and it appears to be of grave importance that we all do. And with Easter dawning, with theoretically its slightly reflective tone, as Mark Carnegie suggested, but which also signals that, yes, a third of this year of work has already passed, we thought it might be fitting to consider how to secure that job that basically confers meaning to our lives, the real glittering prize. Now, is this a modern invention? Could we have entered a new age of fulfilment in which the great dream is to trade up from money to meaning? And how realistic is that aspiration? Well, for some good wrestling with nice issues like this, I'm delighted to welcome back to the program Roman Krzyżanek. Last year he talked to us about his thought-provoking book, The Wonder Box, Curious Histories of How to Live. Roman's an Australian-born cultural thinker and founding faculty member of the School of Life, which is based in London. Roman, a very warm welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on, Geraldine.
It's a great quote from Dostoevsky, isn't it?
I think it's a great quote, and it's also an urgent quote, that there's a kind of epidemic in the Western world, including Australia and Europe and North America, of people who are dissatisfied with their jobs and seeking meaning. I mean, today, around 60% of people say that they are dissatisfied with their careers and are looking for something else. And even worse than that, around half of them are too afraid to make the change. So I think that we're caught in a kind of labyrinth. So many people are wondering, well, how can I, as you said there, you know, trade up from money to meaning and find a job which can, you know, fulfill the many sides of our personalities and do more than just pay the bills.
Yes, I think the US records the lowest level of satisfaction over the last two decades. So what do you think is going on there?
Well, what's actually happened is a long historical process, not just in the US, but elsewhere as well. You know, just a few decades ago, people didn't really expect their jobs to offer broad fulfillment and to really satisfy their passions and use all their talents. I mean, someone like my father, who came to Australia after the Second World War from Poland, in the 1950s, he never expected to have a life-fulfilling job that used all of his passions and talents. But a few generations later, we do. Our expectations have increased. And part of the reason why so many people are dissatisfied with their jobs is, in fact, because of those higher expectations. So we've got to work harder and harder to find work which is enjoyable. We have to look in more crevices. We have to draw on philosophy and history and psychology, everything we can.
You don't mention this, and it's just occurred to me that a very similar set of observations is made by people who study marriage as an institution and say that actually there's been a steadily rising, in this age of individualism, a steadily rising expectation of individual satisfaction within marriage and very strong intimacy bonds that actually in some ways marriage has never really been asked to achieve, and consequently the pressure is too great.
In some ways the pressure is too great. People do find themselves always, you know, hoping that the grass is going to be greener with their careers. But I think, in fact, there's amazing evidence that can really pinpoint what it is that a satisfying job should look like. And there's a wonderful quote from the Greek philosopher Aristotle, who said that where the needs of the world and your talents cross, there lies your vocation. And in that quote is this fantastic piece of career advice, that if you can find that place where your values and what you're really good at are sort of at an intersection, then that's when you're most likely to find fulfillment. Mm. And a lot of people think, well, you're most likely to, you know, the kind of jobs that we like are ones that give us big salaries and high status. But actually what the studies show is that following Aristotle's advice is actually what's going to give you fulfillment in your career in the long term.
And does that give you dignity? How important do you think that is in this discussion? Because that's been a very interesting way of thinking by people like Richard Sennett and quite a lot of the very, actually quite conservative thinkers in the US, saying that part of the trouble is that there's been a lack of dignity ascribed to jobs that are not perceived to be making money. So that it's a sort of a dance between the community and the individual.
I think there's two different ways to think about dignity. One way is to say, well, we can get dignity from work through having a job which is high status, being a barrister or being a solicitor or something like that. But I think the other way to feel dignity as an individual is to feel as if you're respected for the work that you do, for what you bring to a job. And in my own experience, actually, I experimented once. I gave up being an academic, a university lecturer, and I decided to become a gardener. And it was one of the most terrible experiences. I thought it was going to be my savior to dig my hands in the soil and get in touch with nature. And what I actually found was that when I was weeding on the ground and planting petunias and things like that, people would walk past me, and this was gardening in a prestigious Oxford college in one of these posh college gardens. Mm. The professors and the students would walk past me when I was weeding in the rain, and they wouldn't even say hello. And what really struck me was that there was a lack of respect there, and I didn't think that I really needed it very much, that kind of respect. But gradually I found my self-respect draining away, and I found that really there was a kind of lack of dignity which I couldn't enjoy my job, and I realized that getting respect was actually a key to fulfilling work.
Isn't that interesting? Because you do acknowledge that this whole notion of finding fulfilling work is very much a Western notion, and one that's, as you say, only arisen in the last few decades. Now, can I ask you, is that because we are much wealthier than previous generations, and therefore we have the good fortune to take the time to think about how we work? We haven't got panzer divisions at the front door or the side door, and survival isn't an issue day to day. So we're actually able to dwell on this?
I think you're right to some extent, that the luxury of greater material sort of well-being and more luxurious lifestyles does give us the sort of space to think about fulfilling work in our lives. If you're spending your time in the dole queue at the job centre, the idea of fulfilling work might seem like a utopian idea. But even in tough economic times, no matter where you are in the job hierarchies, we still all have to make decisions about what to do, whether we should retrain in a new career, whether we should try and go freelance. And I think one of the things that we can do is look back to the past for inspiration. One of the ideas I think is really important is to think about whether we should be a high achiever or a wide achiever. Because for the last century, our culture has been telling us that, well, the best way to find fulfillment is to become a specialist in a narrow field, what I think of as a high achiever, a corporate tax accountant or a pediatrician or a logo designer or something like that. But if you go back to the Renaissance, the great ideal was not to achieve high, but to achieve wide, to do many jobs at the same time and fulfill the many sides of who you are. And the ultimate wide achiever was Leonardo da Vinci, who in any one week might be painting a portrait of an artistic patron and designing a machine for a power-hungry Milanese duke and then doing some anatomy experiments on the side. And today that's called being a portfolio worker, where you do several jobs simultaneously, often freelance. And that idea of a portfolio worker, I think, is one that matters no matter, you know, how well off you happen to be. It's one we can all contemplate, and it's a smart option.
Roman Krznarik is my guest, and he's written a book called How to Find Fulfilling Work. I can hear listeners everywhere saying, well, how do I apply that to my life? Like, a lot of the examples you provide in your book are people leaving corporate jobs to get more fulfillment. But if everyone is seeking fulfilling work, who will work in these big bureaucratic offices? Because systems management does matter to the way our society operates, doesn't it?
That's right. I think if everybody did go off and do their dream career, there would be certain gaps in the job market. I think one thing to think about is to not only consider, well, how might I find a fulfilling job and leave my current one, but actually, how can I make my current job more fulfilling? What can I do to make it more enjoyable? And one of the things you can think about there is, you know, whether you're working as an IT project manager or school teacher, wherever you happen to be, is to think about the idea of flow experience. And the concept of flow is the idea of getting yourself in what athletes call being, you know, in the zone, where you're so involved in what you happen to be doing, that nothing else seems to matter, that all sense of past and future time disappears. And I think you can get that doing lots of different kinds of jobs, as long as what you're doing is challenging you in some way, but not so boring that you find it too easy. It might be through...
Well, I'm wondering whether you are actually harking back to something that used to pertain more, where people had their day job, but they had a range of other outlets that often gave them more satisfaction, like the people who did the volunteering in big organisations like Rotary, or they ran the local pony club or whatever, where they actually felt they were more skilled, but they had to pay the mortgage during the day. Are you seeking for a return to that type of thing?
I think that's one of the options that's open to people. If you don't feel that you can leave your current job and turn your favorite hobby into a career, and a lot of people can't realistically because they've got mortgages to pay, they don't have the confidence, they feel trapped. What you can do is, instead of trying to find fulfilling work, you can, what I think of as, work for fulfilling life. And one of my favorite examples is this American poet called Wallace Stevens, who wanted the security of an everyday job. And he, although he was one of America's great modernist poets of the early 20th century, during the day, he worked as an insurance company executive, and he did his poetry at night. And in the 1950s, he was offered a permanent position at Harvard University so he could spend all his time writing poetry, and he decided to turn it down and keep with his day job. So that idea of separating work and play really is something that works for some people and something that I think we can aspire to.
So in questions of status then, status matters, doesn't it? And hasn't that been more and more coming through work? I wonder how you're going to unravel that.
I think status is really an old-fashioned idea. The evidence shows that you may well have something that's considered a high-status job, you know, like an academic or something like that, but actually those people are not necessarily going to be the most fulfilled. The evidence just doesn't show it, that doing something that other people think is valuable isn't necessarily what you are going to find value. And I think ultimately what we need to do is become experimental with the way we approach our working lives. And one of the things I think is important is to, what I think of as, acting first and thinking afterwards. If you're going to find a fulfilling job, don't just do what everybody's told us for the last century, which is, you know, write a resume and do lots of research and then start sending out applications to a particular profession, but to go out and start conducting job experiments, to do volunteering, to do shadowing, to do a bit of experiential learning. And I think that's the way that we're most likely to find jobs that are big enough for our spirits.
And then face the facts, like you, as you did, if you actually decide how much you do need the respectability of the conventional job.
That's right, and we're always going to be trying to search for respect. But I think the great hope is that we can find that respect in lots of different situations, whether you're working in a big company or a small firm. The main point is for somebody to, in a way, look you in the eye, to appreciate your particular skills, to treat you as a human being. I think ultimately that matters to us, to make us feel as if our presence matters.
So finally, that Aristotle remark, what was it again?
Where the need of the world and your talents cross, there lies your vocation.
Okay. Thank you, Roman. Lovely to talk. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
And Roman's book is called How to Find Fulfilling Work. It's published by Macmillan Books, and it's spelt Roman Krznaric, Krznaric, if you happen to be going out and having a little look. Next on Saturday Extra, on this extended weekend, Reflections on Walking.